Welcome to the Positive Solutions for Life podcast. I'm Peggy Meyer, and I'm so excited you are here. In this and future episodes released on Fridays of each week, you will hear from other entrepreneurs, creators, and personal growth leaders through interviews and summaries of personal development books, strategies, tools, and ideas that can help you transform your mind and body from the inside out, so you can truly, truly live the life you desire. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Positive Solutions for Life podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Karen Kramer. Dr. Karen is all about healing hearts and inspiring minds. She's a grief recovery expert, retreat center founder, mindset facilitator, speaker, and author. She's a guiding light who has transformed the lives of hundreds of thousands of individuals around the world over the past three decades through her international coaching experiences at the Center for Creative Leadership, working with new managers and executives, and at Teen Wisdom Incorporated, certifying teen girls as life coaches, and at Recalibrate 360, where she helped certified individuals in life-altering realms of neuro-linguistics programming, timeline therapy, and hypnotherapy. In addition, she maintains a private practice, is the founder of Villa Vision Wellness and Retreat Center, a sanctuary of tranquility, and she has a new book out called Healthy Grief. A native of San Diego, Dr. Karen cherishes her life in the embrace of sunny Southern California. As a woman entrepreneur and a mother who successfully raised five children in a blended family, she intimately understands the art of juggling life's priorities while maintaining a semblance of sanity most of the time. So welcome to the podcast, Dr. Karen.
Thank you, Peggy. It's a blessing to be here.
Yes, I know your time is precious, and I'm so glad you took the opportunity and time to speak with me today. I would like you to start out the conversation by sharing just a little bit more about your personal journey and how it has led you to where you are today.
Yes, I would love to do that. Thank you, Peggy. I have been in the field of leadership development and coaching for over 30 years. So a lot of conscious mind work. And when I say that, it is being in the coaching world of, hey, where do you want to go? Where do you want to do? What's the map? And let me hold you accountable to get there. But I also found with some of my clients, there were some struggles along the way, as there are as we're moving forward into an area that we're not familiar with yet, some things that were holding them back. And it really was 5 years ago when I stepped into that world. I love to call it, you read my bio beautifully. I like to say, like, I love looking at understanding people within systems, organizations, teams, families, intimate relationships. And the last 5 years, I took a step more into understanding the systems within our mind. So to answer your question is, I had one of those days. I had one of those days about 12 years ago. And again, those who are watching don't know me. It's one of those days where I just lost it. I was screaming and yelling at my husband and my kids. I hung up on my mom. I was cussing out my brothers. And again, this was not my norm, but I just lost it. And I'll tell you a bit about what led up to that day, but I looked at the aftermath and I thought, okay, I need help. So I went to go see a therapist. Now I know being a therapy, all this, I'm going to say this, this is my story. Okay. Yep. This was my journey. Well-meaning therapists, well-meaning medical professionals. So this was just my experience that I had. I want to set that up going forward. So I walked in to the therapist who I pretty much guessed was newly minted and a little nervous working with me, seeing my background. And she basically asked a couple of questions. Really, I think there's missed opportunities to go deeper. So just setting that up. But I walked out of there with a diagnosis of situational anxiety. She even looked at me and she said, I have situational anxiety. Don't you think you have situational anxiety? To which I'm like, I'm not even sure what that is. But okay, check the box, and was sent off to anxiety group. And then a couple of weeks later, I was still struggling. And I thought, well, I was in my early 40s. So maybe I'm going through early menopause. So I went to my doctor, and again, well-meaning doctors, please understand this is my story. Went to my doctor, and within 2 minutes, as I was sharing what led up to that day, she cut me off and prescribed me drugs. And I'm not the kind of person who takes even anything beyond like ibuprofen, maybe for pain, or vitamins. Other than that, like I know natural. So I refuse that. And after another mini meltdown that I had with my son a couple days after that, my husband's like, you know that destination spa, honey, you may want to go to that just to get away. So Peggy, I went. It was a lovely time. 7-day destination spa. I was away from everything. I had can sleep on my own, got exercise, ate healthy food, had massage, pedicures, and acupuncture, and it was just heavenly
Oh,
for
yeah.
7 days. And 2 hours after being home, I was bickering with my loving husband again, and nothing to do with him and everything to do with me. And when I look back at that time, I realized there were missed opportunities that were there. What led up to that day, or should I say, on that day, I had just put my beloved 18-year-old cat to sleep. But really, that was just the start of my grief experience, because a month prior to that, my dad had passed away. My 90-year-old father had passed away, and I had prevented from going through the grief. I thought I was doing well by stepping in and doing the logistics and doing everything a good daughter should do. And on the day that I put my beloved cat to sleep, all those emotions started to bubble up. So what really kicked it off really was the straw that broke the camel's back was a call with my mom about something that was relatively minor that probably would have irritated me, but we would have worked through it. But it just knocked me into this angry spiral. So really looking at that and recognizing there's missed opportunities sometimes when we just want to label, drug, or just temporarily deal with the symptoms and not an opportunity to truly drive down and understand grief.
Oh my gosh, I can so relate to your story. I mean, I think everybody can. I mean, there's times where we just flip out and get angry over the littlest things, and we really have to look within and going, oh my gosh, like what led up to that? And we do stuff a lot of stuff inside. And so we kind of cover it up and then trudge forward. You successfully got five kids going on. I'm still successfully working on my six kids getting out of the house. So like,
Oh,
and so
honor you.
it's like we are, we all have something. We might not have that many kids, we might have a lot of other things, but we all have times where we just can't handle it.
And even to that point, Peggy, I look at, well, let me step back to my definition of grief, which is different from the traditional definition, and then to the point that you just made. So when I look at grief, it really was within the last 5 years that I truly was looking at what is going on with my clients, from sexual molestations to dealing with the death and suicide of loved ones, to divorces, to empty nesters, to career changes, all of these. And I stepped back and I said, okay, what are the themes about what they're looking at? And that's where I came to grief. I specifically stayed away from trauma. There are those who are very, very well skilled, and you mentioned mental illness as well, right? So very well skilled. I specifically wanted something that every single one of us will experience at some point in our life. So when I say grief, people tend to think about death and dying. So if you did Google grief, Google that word, you would find a definition that's something like this, where a major event happens where you have a significant emotions associated with it, and it usually continues on associating with death. However, it's also been described now with going through divorce and other things. I also add on to that definition, when what once was is no longer. When we had something, right? Whether it is a career, and all of a sudden it's no longer there due to retirement or a transition or being let go or a merger. To I deal a lot with identity, and identity actually goes through all of this. You can relate, where I even recently I've been working with a lot of women specifically who are in their 50s, 60s, and even 70s, and they're saying things like, I did not expect that I would be dealing with some of these things at this point in my life. So even the loss of hopes and dreams. So those are like, I thought I would be coming to this point in my life and I'd have the money to do the things. I'd be traveling. I'd have that partner with me. I'd be in good health. I would be, if they chose to, is I would be surrounded by my grandkids and all this mysterious thing. They're like, no, my partner's not there. I may not be married, financial, my health is not there. My kids are moved away, or they chose not to have kids. It's just this whole loss of hopes and dreams is also part of grief.
Because grief is just loss to me. I mean, it's something that we've lost and we can't get back. Just kind of like you were saying about, when something once was is no longer, it's gone. It's like what we anticipated, what we expected is not there. It's not going to happen. And so there is an emotional response to that. And everybody can have that.
Thank you. And that's actually where I was going past the definition is when I, and I know you've experienced some of this too, Peggy, so I feel like I'm speaking to the choir here, is when we have an experience of a loss, right? It could be, again, whether it's a loss of a loved one due to death or divorce or loss of expectations, career, anything, we tease that apart. Our actions and reactions based upon that loss has much more to do with what's underneath our past traumas, our triggers, our limiting beliefs that are underneath that. So I've even experienced that. Like we had two siblings who've experienced the same type of loss, let's say the loss of a parent, but the way in which they act and react out their grief has much to do with what's underneath. So as I've been working with my clients in the last 5 years, specifically with over 1,200 individuals, yes, this event happens, this loss happens, but it's a window into something else. It's a window into understanding how do we respond to loss. When I started Healthy Grief, it was based upon an experience of a client I had, actually three clients back to back, when I was like, okay, people need to understand this. This being how unprocessed grief settles in the body. So we'll get to that. But it's around the experiences that they were having based upon the various different losses. And it wasn't just helping somebody through the loss of a spouse or helping somebody through the loss of a career. It was helping them through loss, because once they're helped through loss and really understand what's underneath that, then the next time they're faced with a loss in life, they're able to act and react differently. So I actually started Healthy Grief not only with my clients, but with my own journey in various different kinds of losses, to the point where 2 years ago, I was able to healthfully process through the loss of my older brother and my 97 and a half year old mother 2 weeks apart, and a week later be able to step back into a program with over 60 people as the head coach and be in a space where I was emotionally able to receive and process and work with other people without being triggered myself, healthfully, not avoidant like my previous story, but healthfully process and grieve and also be open to other people. And that had a lot to do with the process that I use with my clients as well.
Oh, that sounds amazing because I think a lot of people, have this idea about what grief is. And you said healthy grief. And it's like, that's a little different sometimes. We might not know what that is, and we might not have any idea that it could be possible for us. But could you explain what you mean by healthy grief?
I'd love to. And I'm going to also
Yes.
bring in the subtitle of this, which is Normalizing and Navigating Loss in a Culture of Toxic Positivity. So there is both healthy and toxic that are
We
part
might have to
of
get
this.
to both of those. I'm about definitions, how do you define this? So let's be clear. So whatever you want to start with.
Well, I will start with the title since you started there. So wasn't actually one of the first titles that came to me was Good Grief. And then thinking about Good Grief, Charlie Brown. It's already been taken. And actually there are some books that are out there. And it's the couple concepts behind the actual primary title there. That grief in and of itself is healthy. We live in a grief avoidance society. Grief avoidance. We have things like the be happy. Like if you're not happy, something's wrong with you. If you're not happy, you need to be fixed. Happiness is even written into the Declaration of Independence, the pursuit of happiness, right? There's this concept that we have to be happy or something's wrong. So that gets into the culture of toxic positivity, which I'll talk about just a bit. The other concept to that is to, so it's to be able to honor, like when I'm going through grief, even the story I started with my father, it was almost like it wasn't, something was wrong with me. I felt anything other than, even though I was, my dad passed away and I was daddy's girl, I need to be strong for the family. I need to be strong for everybody else, which that, by the way, is a form of toxic positivity for myself, feeling I had to put on the smile for myself. And this feeling that grief is healthy, like it's something to talk about, it's something to normalize that every single one of us will experience. Even when I say about the book, is grief is an everyday, it's an everyday types of losses that we have. And if we don't, we think about it like, oh, I can't find my keys and I missed an appointment. I mean, this is minor here, but it's like, even that, like disappointment and loss about things that we have in every day is, yeah, okay, I'm feeling disappointed. I'm feeling lost. I'm not feeling good about what's going on right now. Just acknowledging that versus saying, oh, nope, got to push that aside because it's bad. It's ugly. I shouldn't feel that way. That should have ought of when we shed all over ourselves, right? And really honoring the fact that grief is a normal, natural process for us. And the more in which we can see, hear, and understand our own grief is when we're healthier, as well as being able to see, hear, and understand other people when they're in their grief situation without feeling like we need to tell them what to do to fix them or cheer them up. Because when they're happier, I'm feeling more at ease and happier. Again, that's a bit about the toxic positivity, is when we may try to cheer people up as well. So that's a bit about healthy grief. The other bit about healthy grief, which I dive into in the book and experience with my own clients, is what I'm, excuse me, mentioned previously. Unprocessed grief will settle in the body. Processed grief will settle in the body. And that's why I wrote this book. I had three clients who had physical ailments that were showing up in their body. And first one was by doing the deep work, which was around her sadness and depression, in this case around her divorce. When we did the 1 month follow-up, she said, surprise. She kept on using the surprise. So when we were doing the deep work, she had mentioned, I have an ovarian cyst that, and it was common for her to have cysts, but it became so inflamed that she had to go in for surgery. Well, I noted it at that point in time. A month later, when we did our review, she kept on saying, my doctor and I were so surprised it was no longer there. My doctor and I were so surprised it was no longer there. So finally, after repeating it three times, I asked her, tell me more. Now, cysts in and of themselves can recede. It is possible for them to recede. What was surprising is that cyst not only receded, but it showed no signs of actually being there in the first place.
Oh, wow.
In the mind-body work that I do, and I'm getting chills on this again too, because I
Oh,
love telling the story. Yes, it's just much more to this. Cysts are also, not in every case, so please be aware as I'm sharing this, not in every case, are also pockets of unprocessed sadness, cysts, sadness. We had reduced the sadness, released it, and now it allowed her body to come back to balance. She was the first of three clients that inspired the book. The next one that I worked with was, and Stephanie, she's actually what I call the poster child for this book. She came to me because she had just been diagnosed with stage two colon cancer. It was 2 years to 2 months up to 5 years when her husband passed away, death by suicide, and she was carrying around the guilt that she couldn't save him. And her doctor, she said, just prior to coming to me, because I've been around her, like, okay, Stephanie, you're ready for a conversation. She was avoiding it, thinking it's therapy. You know, I don't avoid that. But then she got the diagnosis and she asked her doctor and she said, how long has this been in my body? And her doctor said to her, Stephanie, you were just diagnosed with this, but this has been growing in your body for 5 years. Now, come back to it. She finally made the recognition that, hey, I'm 2 months away from the 5 year anniversary of my husband passing away. So when we did the work, it was only 4.5 hours of deep work, not only released that guilt that she was carrying, also went back to, and again, she's in my book, so this is all, this is not confidential information, went back to releasing being sexually molested at the age of six as well. Now, bringing her body back to balance, starting that healing journey for her, being able to release that C word from the colon. Now, at the time that we're recording this, Peggy, I want to add in one more thing because this emphasizes why I did this book and why here 3 days ago I wanted to scream from the mountaintop about this book, as well as how unprocessed grief does settle in the body. I had another client who came to me. She was diagnosed with colon cancer. We're still trying to clarify at what stage. 4 years ago, her 26-year-old son died by suicide. Now, you tell me that there's not a connection between grief, and she was carrying around guilt as well. Grief and guilt, in this case, around the passing and death by suicide family member and showing up in the colon. There's so many connections here. And the CDC said back in 2022, the two leading causes of death, CDC, okay, the Center for Disease Control, the two leading causes of death in the United States, first one, cancer. Second one, heart disease. And I've experienced so many connections with emotions associated with those two specifically. I'm just here to like rid our society of so many ailments, many of which are just those that are embedded within the tissues of our body.
Oh, praise you so
Praise
much
you
for the
so
work
much.
that you're doing. Oh, it is
Thank you.
so needed because, well, you know, I don't have to tell you, but you know, you're talking about things getting just settled into our cells, into our bodies, and it stays there until we process it. And if in those processing, we don't want to do because it's hard work sometimes. It's uncovering, it's peeling away layers of deep-rooted stuff, which is really just a lot of emotions and our thoughts and what we put to make it mean, the beliefs that we have around them. And we are so quick to just not want to touch that part.
Yes. And another point to what you're making, which gets into the culture. So there are four main books which are part of Healthy Grief. There's a lot of references in there, four main books. And I want to hold on to what you're just talking about here because I'll go off track. Brené Brown, okay, Atlas of the Heart, so researching emotions. Wendy Jensen, the Healing Questions Guide, and I have these here too behind me, but I pull them off, which looks at the mind body. So when it came to the colon, for example, I was able to go through cancer, colons, tumors, and ask a couple of questions. It's a way in which I see what energy is stuck in the body. But also getting into the industry culture, that's where I was going, is Dr. Basil van der Kolk, A Body Keeps the Score. There's another big resource there around a psychotherapist who also backtracked and said, hey, for those of us in my field, I think we're missing the mark if we're just diagnosing and giving medication. And in this case, he was specifically looking at childhood traumas. And so he started to back into there's other ways. And again, much of his work is also in here. I was able to meet him a month ago. Amazing gentleman, very witty. So that was one book, again, about challenging the culture about the way in which we look at it. And one thing you said too is around thinking it's going to be hard. Okay. So hold on to that culture and hard. The fourth book is actually Dr. Gabor Mate, and he's written a couple books associated with addictions, but the most recent one is The Myth of Normal, Illness, Trauma, and Healing in a Toxic Culture. So let's get back to that. And he's a physician, by the way. Same type of thing as Dr. Basil van der Kolk is for physicians. He said, we're missing the mark too. We're quickly diagnosing, but we're not getting to the root cause of what's underneath that. And in his book and a podcast that I specifically listened to first, is he had a number of women who were coming to him who were diagnosed with autoimmune disorders. And he said, okay, there's something here if being the good researcher, there's something here if there's women who are being diagnosed with these autoimmune disorders. So multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, others that are out there. So he's starting to ask them a little bit more about their background, like their lifestyle. And what he came up to was a loss of identity. And this phrase I associate with Dr. Gabor Mate, and I realized he didn't say it. It was my interpretation of it. A loss of identity leads to pathology. is my interpretation of it. Loss of identity leads to pathology. What he was finding is these women had lost contact with who they were, their identity, whether it was I'm no longer working, and therefore, who am I when I'm not working? I've been divorced. Who am I when I'm no longer a wife? My kids have gone off to school or they no longer need me. Who am I when I'm not a mother? Like that loss of identity is so powerful. And so when we lose this sense of ourself, it weakens our immune system. There's a word, psychoneuroimmunology, which gets to that psycho mind, immune system, neurology that settles in the body, where when there is a disruption at the core of who we are, it weakens our immune system. And I can't remember the theorist who created that. But all this to say, I know this is a leading up to something, Peggy, what you mentioned around culture. So think of it this way: if I'm in pain, emotional or physical pain, I want to go to, let's just say, traditional therapist. I want to go to a traditional doctor and I want them to quickly and easily alleviate my pain. Again, emotional pain, physical pain. I want them to quickly alleviate my pain. What that does as a culture is it places pressure upon those well-meaning mental and physical, medical and mental professionals, right? To come up with quick solutions, just like my story at the beginning, that therapist, that medical professional, they were trained to come up with quick solutions. I only have like 10, 15 minutes with a client or 20, 45, depending upon who they are. I need to go through the DSM or I need to go through my medical. I need to look for certain symptoms that are showing up and look for quick solutions. Medications, surgeries, diagnosis, whatever it is, to quickly get them moving on and quickly alleviate that. In many cases, we're only dealing with the symptoms and we're not taking the time because something you mentioned earlier, Peggy, it's hard and it takes time to dive down to the root that's underneath to be able to release that, which I challenge that. It doesn't mean it's hard. It can be very quick and easy. And there are various, I know I do it. I know there's others, yourself as well. There are so many different modalities that are out there to quickly release it and to do it easily. It doesn't take a long time and it's not hard, but that's the thinking that we have, as well as this culture that if I have a pain, I need to go here. And from the professional side, I need to give them quick results to alleviate that pain, or I'm not being a good practitioner. So it's this culture that we're in.
Oh, yes. And it's our perception about it. Because it's our perception that makes it hard or not. Like I can say it's hard work because it's uncomfortable.
It's
I
outside of
don't
our
want to do
comfort
anything
zone.
that's uncomfortable, so I kind of push it off. I mean, I think that's part of the culture, right? We don't like being uncomfortable. We want to be just comfortable. That's why we go for the quick fixes. That's why we go, quickly. I want a solution fast. I want to feel better fast. But we can feel better fast for a longer time if we do the work of that inner work of transforming ourselves from the inside out and helping people do that. I want to circle back around because I know we've talked about this a little bit and I haven't gotten clear on it, but the toxic positivity.
So thank you, Peggy. So when we think about positivity, I've already set up this concept that if somebody is anything other, or somebody or myself, but anything other than happy or neutral, that something's wrong, something's bad, something needs to be fixed. So again, let's start there from a cultural perspective. So the toxic part is either for ourselves, like my own story, if I say I have to put on a smiley face at the dinner table, even though I am deeply grieving the loss of something. That is toxic because it prevents me from acknowledging, engaging, and processing through, healthfully, the grief process. Okay, just like I did for that first month after my dad passed away, I halted, I prevented, I blocked myself from going through that grief process and made it more toxic for me in the end, like acting out when I finally hit the grief process. Now, from a perspective of somebody who is engaging with somebody else who's grieving, what do we say that then can come across as toxic because it prevents the other person from healthfully going through the grief process. And I'll give you some examples. I actually talk about it more in Healthy Grief. When I was seeking out the 30 grief survival case studies that are in my book, I started with my clients, yes, some of my own cases, but I wanted to expand it. And I have seven different categories of different types of grief that are in there. And I was reaching out to certain individuals to make sure that they were healthfully through the grief process before I invited them to write their own story and then placed the framework on top of it. And one of them, his name is David. It had been 11 years after, in this case, I feel like I'm talking about a lot of suicide, but it just happened to be this case. Teenage son, death by suicide, had passed away. And I actually reached out to him soon after the deathversary at that point in time. So we were still raw. And by the way, through the process, we chose that he not to write his story in the book because he was so raw at that point in time. But he's really the one that really brought it forward, Peggy, about toxic positivity, because he was soon after his son had passed, a well-meaning friend said to him, "Well, your son's in a better place." I know I probably have said something like that in the past, and I know many of you who are listening have probably said something like that that just pops out of your mouth, where all good intentions, right? All good intentions. We want to say something to put a band-aid over or help somebody who's grieving. And David's like, "You, like, you know, a better place would have been right here with me." Like, it just was like that toxic piece is also about what is it that we can say that is supportive and aids in the healing process for somebody else without being more toxic and hurtful to somebody else's grief process.
So is, I don't want to like leave a cliffhanger there. Can you give a couple examples of what might be supportive? Because we can kind of go, oh yeah, I've done the maybe not so much good, the toxic part. Can you give us one or two examples of a statement that we can say?
And I actually go through, I think, about 2 dozen of them in the book. And let's start with this. When somebody's going through a grief process, some of the best things you can do is see, feel, and hear them. Okay. I will leave out understand at this point in time, and I'm actually going to start there. Many of us therapists probably know that if you say something like, "Oh, I understand," you may get resistance. Like, of course, you don't understand me because you're not in my position. You've never lost, blah, 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 right? So I would remove that understand, but connecting up with somebody and where they are. So, for example, Facebook, that's like typically there's people, whether they've lost a pet, they've lost, they've been diagnosed with a health issue, or they've lost a friend or a loved one. That's where I see a lot more showing up. And again, it also can just be a family, a friend that you hear, but I don't know about you, but for me, that's where I typically hear and see is on social media. Some people are posting about it. And one of the things that I start off with is, "I feel you or see you, sending you love." Okay, sending wishes. There's been back and forth about, "I'm sorry for your loss." So that's another one I typically lead with. And I've also heard from other people, they're like, "I'm sick and tired of people saying, 'I'm sorry for your loss.'" So know the person and how they feel, but just acknowledging that you see, hear, and feel them. And depending upon who they are, I'm a lover, I'm a giver. So sending my love, sending condolences, like acknowledging that they're really good friends, they're a really good family member, obviously taking it to the next step, not just posting a comment if you find it on social media, is texting or calling and saying, "Hey, I'm here for you. How can I best be of service for you?" And again, I go through more details than here, like people who are going through different types of grief, whether it is like forgetting to actually do things like eating. So even when it comes to food trains or providing comfort with things like food, or one gentleman said, "Hey, when I was in the middle of the grief, the one thing I wanted was somebody to mow my lawn and get me toilet paper." Like sometimes when we're in the middle of grief, we don't know what we want. So it's that whole idea about, "Hey, I'm here for you. You tell me what you want." When they're in the middle of deep grief, they need something, but they're not at that place where they may be telling you what they need. So sometimes just being there and just sitting I did this with a friend recently too, who went through a significant loss. It's like, hey, can I come over with a cup of coffee and sit on the couch and just be? Like, what do you want? Do you want to like watch funny movies? Do you want to like watch the birds? Do you want to cry on my shoulder? Do you just want to chat about something? Like just being. So I know I've expanded beyond that, but it's just them being seen, heard, and yes, felt, understood, but not using that word. Okay.
Yeah, because that's what a basic need, I think, of all of us. We need to be seen and heard and felt, like, understood in our feelings, like, not understood and in how we actually went through the same thing or not, but just understand where they're coming from at that point. And so thank you for sharing that. A few things that we could do instead of being toxic positivity, like, hey, just get over it. Like, we don't want to do that because it is there. We want to meet them where they're at. We want to see them, and we want to make sure that they know that we feel them as well. So thank you. I know we could go on and on because there's so many good things in your book, and I'm so grateful for all the work. And where can some of the listeners find out more about you, your book, some of your coaching programs, your spa?
Yes, there's so much more. So the main place to go where I have some links to various different things is my website, which is drkarenkramer.com. So just like you see my name here on the screen without the dot, drkarenkramer.com. On there, a couple different things. You're going to see when you first go to the site, up in the upper right-hand corner is a book a call. That's a free consultation if you choose to, whether it's talking about my book, whether it's talking about your story, whether it is you want your story in the next book, hint, hint, in the next book is coming. Just an
Great.
opportunity to connect up with me. If I am not the right resource for you, I am honest about that. And I have various different referral sources that are out there. So my hope and my need is in a 20-minute consultation with you is that I can give you some resource to move forward, whatever that is for you. And then there's a ribbon right underneath it that has a picture of Healthy Grief. And if you click on that, it'll take you to the book trailer, as well as a lot of the information about Healthy Grief. In the book trailer, it even has a quick testimonial from Stephanie. She's the one who I mentioned is the kind of the poster child for this, the endorsement by Jack Canfield, Chicken Soup of the Soul, as many of the other reviews and resources that are there, which then leads you through some quick links on how to find this. And yes, it's also on Amazon. That's typically the question that I get. And the rest of the page also gives you some information about how to connect to the Villa Vision Wellness and Retreat Center. What do we have there? What are the option opportunities that are there? So again, www.drkarenkramer.com will get you that book a call, the book, and other resources available to who I am and what services and products I offer.
Awesome. I will put that in the show notes. Thank you. So, as we wrap up today, do you have a thought or quote or something that you would like to leave the listeners with?
Well, actually, I had a thought about a quick technique, but that takes a little bit longer than just a moment. Unless you have it, do you
Yeah,
want me to leave with the technique?
go ahead, whatever you
Okay.
want to do.
It was just something that came to mind right when you asked. There is a quick pain paradigm, and this also helps you get connected with your body. So it really is a two-question process and then a repeat. So here it is. If you find that you have any anchor pain, whether it is, say, a headache or stub your toe or something like that in your body, is ask yourself this question. And again, you can do it internally. Is on a scale from 0 to 10, what is my pain level? 10 being excruciating and painful, 0 being no pain at all. So when you answer that question, verbalize your response. 8, as an example. The next question is, what am I feeling right now? And this is a feeling word, okay? What one word, and whatever that is, you're going to say it out loud. Tired, anxious, whatever it is. Pause, then start the process again. On a scale from 0 to 10, what's my pain level? Respond out loud. Second question, what am I feeling right now? It may be silly, whatever it is. Continue to do that. The idea is you start to connect your body, right, with what you're feeling. I had a client who came up with rejection, and when she did, the pain immediately went away. Pains in our body are those ways that our body is speaking to us. The more we listen to the pains in our body, the more it'll give us answers to what's underneath that for you. So the more you do that exercise, the more you will connect in with your body and what it is talking to you. Our body talks to us. By the way, healthy grief is more than a book. It's a lifelong companion to various different types of losses. So I hope those resources help you, Peggy, as well as anybody who is watching, to live life healthfully.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Karen. You have been a blessing to us today with all of your knowledge, your two question pain technique thing. I am just, we can do that just simply. We can just do
Hopefully.
that simply. And I think we do sometimes might get to the silly part when we start doing it over and over again. But our
It's
body.
okay. I'm tired. I'm silly. But once you start getting into it, your body can come up with more.
With more. And that's what we just need to do is we need to tune into our body because our body traps things inside of us and we just need to awaken it to realize what it is that it's trying to tell us and then work through that. So thank you so much, Dr. Karen. Blessing. Love it. Check out Healthy Grief. Check out her on drkarenkramer.com and all of her resources. So again, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Peggy. It's a blessing.
Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you found some value, insights, and something that resonated with you in today's show. If today's show spoke to you, would you please share it with a friend and go over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you are listening from and subscribe to the show so that you can be the first to know when new content and episodes go live. While you're there, would you please give it some love? Please like it, comment on it, and leave a 5-star rating and review. Thank you so much in advance for taking 2 minutes of your time to do this. Your likes, comments, and reviews really help get the word out to more people who need to hear there are positive solutions for their life. I would love to connect with you. You can find me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, whichever is your favorite platform, and let's have a conversation about today's show. Thanks for listening and have a great week.